Thanks. Am I on? Am I working? Can I go up here? Awesome. It's not because I like the height, honestly. Right, let me get myself sorted here. Are you guys okay? Good. I'm excited. Yeah, I'm really well. Thanks, Phil. I'm excited to be here today. In our church, we call this the Britney Spears mic. It's good, isn't it? You like it? Mom, are you going to record the whole thing on your iPad? No? Okay. I'm from Britney Spears' generation, so this is pretty cool. I just want to say it's an absolute honor to be asked to speak here this morning. It really is. Thank you, John, for inviting me here. This is the first time I'm speaking in front of my mum today. That you've heard me preach before, have you, Mum? You have? Oh, okay. Maybe not then. All right, you sit back and chill then. And my brother and my lovely sister, Natalie. Becky is out the back with the kids. My dad has taken my little whirlwind through to creche over there. I'm sure they'll be catching it on the recording. So love you, Mummy. Love you, Dad. Love you, Beck. But also today, this is pretty yikes because my Sunday school teachers are here today. And my youth leaders are here today. Oh, there you go, Nigel. My youth leaders are here today, Danny and Sue, and so many really good friends. I've just spotted Lou, who's one of my oldest friends from childhood. Loads of people I went to Sunday school with, Les and Ruth, who have me in and out of their house as a teenager. Thank you all for coming. I know you haven't come for me today, but for Phoebe. But honestly, it's amazing to see you all. Come and say hi later and have a good catch up. And I just want to start today by really, one thing I've learned from Pastor John is that you speak from your heart, don't you, John? And I've really been challenged by this from spending time with Pastor John. He says what he means, and he's not very English in that he says all the emotional stuff that the rest of us hold back on. So I just want to start by saying to you guys today, you all know who you are. Thank you, actually, for investing in me when I was a child, when I was a teenager. Thank you for keeping me out of the bus stops. Give me a nice warm place, feeding me. When I was a teenager, there's a song I really loved. It was a bit of a ballad, and it was basically a picture of somebody who had gone to heaven, and different people were coming up to them and saying, thank you for what you did. Thank you for being a Sunday school teacher. Thank you for praying for me. Thank you for all these things. And because of what those things that you did, I'm here today. Now, I've not quite got up there yet, but I just want to say the same to my Sunday school teachers, my youth leaders, other people. Auntie Barbie. Is Auntie Barbie here? Where are you, Auntie Barbie? She's in creche. Auntie Barbie, what a legend. Taught me how to pluck my eyebrows. Not that you'd know it today, but what a legend. So the chorus of this song said, thank you for giving to the Lord, for I am the life that was changed. And I really want to say that thank you from the bottom of my heart to you amazing people. Okay, so let's pull it back before Mum starts crying and I start crying. Okay, so I'm Sarah Glasby. I was born Sarah Duffy. I was born in Netherton, just lived in Aintree just up the road for most of my life. Went to school in Netherton. I went to church in Netherton as a small child. We moved to McGull when I was 16. I went to McGull High School, so I'm very much a local girl. I'm currently living in Middlesbrough. I moved over to the northeast when I was 18. Didn't have a clue where Darlington was, or Middlesbrough, or any of the places where I've lived. Some of you will probably be thinking, yep, get home, Google it on the map later. I'm married now to amazing Peter. He can't be with us today. He sends his love, by the way. He was in London last night. He runs a function band, so he was playing at somebody's wedding last night. And I'm mum to my little world changer, Jonah, who's 18 months old. He's going through one of those really adorable, really clingy phases at the moment, where he just believes he should be sellotaped to my leg permanently. So, bless Dad, has gone out with him. Have a little drink of water here, because it's pretty scary, you know. Oh, your faces. Okay. Not your faces are scary, just being so scary. Okay, and I go to church in Middlesbrough, and my church is awesome. Genuinely, just like this church. I love it. It's my family. I love going and meeting with people who inspire me. I go midweek to a small group and then I go on a Sunday as well. Now, I want to tell you something shocking this morning. I'm going to reveal something about myself that might shock you. Okay, I'm glad the kids have gone out. And I don't want you to judge me. Okay, can we do that? Okay, what I need to tell you is I don't believe in dinosaurs. Believe it or not. Now, I'm not going to tell you why I believe that. Well, you know, we're going to come and see me later if you want to know my theology on the subject, but I don't really believe in dinosaurs. And the reason I wanted to share this with you is because I shared this in a staff room when I was teaching a few years ago, and me and my four-year-olds were studying dinosaurs in depth. And I came to this conclusion, and I shared in the staff room, I said, you know what, I don't think I actually believe in dinosaurs. And this, one of my really good friends, who's also called Sarah, said to me, wow, I wouldn't have expected that from you. And I was like, what? So when we got to the bottom of this, and I questioned her a bit further, the reason she didn't expect that from me is she thought, because I was a Christian, because I believed in God, because I believed in Jesus, that I would just believe any story I'm spun. Seriously, she did. And actually, that's not true at all. I was brought up going to church, but I was also taught to question. I was taught to test, to research, to discern, and to detect, both when I'm reading my Bible and when I'm listening to a speaker as well. And it's because of all that, it's because of my own study, and it's because of my own experiences and what I've seen happen in other people's lives, that I do believe in Jesus, and I do believe in God, and I do believe that Jesus died on the cross, and that he came back from the dead. I believe all of those things. So Pastor John's invited me down to talk to you today. I actually got this gig from a performance, this gig from a performance at a funeral, believe it or not, which explains a lot about what Pastor John thinks of you as a congregation, doesn't it really? So he gave me the title of The Cross of Christ. And I was really struck by it, actually. As I say, I was brought up in church and I know the story really well. But as I started to study it and to look at the Bible and to chat to God and ask him what he wanted me to say today and listen to other people's podcasts, which is something I tend to do when I'm researching, I was really challenged by the cross. And actually, that maybe I've taken the cross for granted. Maybe it's been a story that I've known so well that I didn't really get it, if that makes sense. Now, for some of you here today, you might be new to this church, it might be your first time in church, it might be a long time since you visited a church, or you might come every single week, you might tell people about Jesus. So I want you to do me a favor today, wherever you're at, whatever you've brought with you this morning, I just want you to stop for a moment and just consider this. Can you do that for me? Could you do me the honor of that? Just stopping and just thinking for a moment. Really try and think about this as if it's new today, which maybe it is. Okay, so we're going to start with creation, okay? So the Bible, right at the start of the Bible, there's a story of how the world was created and of this couple called Adam and Eve, the first man, the first woman. And Adam and Eve, what are they known for? What's the point of the story? What happens? They sin, okay. So they sin. Now sin, we often think of sin as being the really, really terrible things that happen in the world, you know, like Hitler, for example, definite sinner. Or we sometimes think of sin as being all the fun things that we're not allowed to do, okay? But that's actually a really dangerous misconception of what sin is. It's dangerous to think of sin that way because sin is actually missing the point. It's missing the point of God. It's missing the point of you. And it's missing the point of your relationship with God. A direct translation of the word sin is missing the mark. Okay, so what's the mark? So in the Bible, it talks about the Ten Commandments. You might be able to give me a few of those. You might be able to give me them all. You know, things like don't murder. Yeah, we would agree that's probably a sin. Keep the Sabbath day holy. Keep the worship day holy. And then it's expanded upon in the other early books as well. So the people that are looked at in the start of the Bible, the Israelites are given so many rules and regulations. These 10 rules are expanded upon and it all gets a bit complicated. But in Matthew, okay, I'm going to give a few names out today with numbers. So I might say Matthew 22. That's just a part of the Bible and the Bible's split up in different ways so you can find bits easily because it's a massive, massive book. So in Matthew 22, verse 37, it says this. So somebody's asked Jesus, what's the most important rule? What do we need to remember? And Jesus replied, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. And I would say that, you know, sin is... There's the Ten Commandments to try and keep us on track. That's the mark. There's all the Old Testament rules and stuff, and we can get into a conversation about them later. But Jesus sums up as this: love God first, love the people around you as you love yourself. Okay, so that is the mark. That is what we need to be living up to. And we don't meet that all the time. I certainly don't. Definitely don't. Okay, so we were created for a relationship with God. It says in Psalm 139 that you were knit together in your mother's womb. And that God created you to be who you are. So God is powerful, he is divine, he is massive, he is almighty, he is completely holy, completely perfect. In fact, it says in Exodus 33, you can't see his face and live. Yet we were created to know him and be known by him. And that just blows my mind. So when we, men and women, started with Adam and Eve back in the start of the Bible, when we started to do things because, come on, let's face it, we know best, don't we? That made a mockery of our relationship with God. So what's God going to do? He's created us for a relationship. We've ruined that. We've made a mockery of that. So is he going to lower his standards to carry on that relationship? Is he going to cut off that relationship? No. No way. He doesn't. When I was researching this, I came across a quote that completely blew me away. Now, this isn't a quote, direct quote from the Bible. It's somebody's take on it. And I want you just to take this away and really think about it for yourself. It really helped me understand the severity of sin and what sin really is. But as I say, it's not a quote from the Bible. And the quote was this: when I sin, I kick God off his throne and I put something else in his place. I kick God off his throne and put something else in his place. Okay, so I know what you're thinking. Oh, Sarah, it's a bit harsh, a bit strong, isn't it? But just remember our agreement. Just consider it for a moment. Okay, so let's just choose something that we would all agree is sin. Stealing a car. We all think that's a sin. Something that's wrong. We shouldn't do it. If you steal a car, what you're saying? You're saying, I need this car more than that other person. I deserve to have it. My needs are more important than that other person that God created. The people that God created don't matter to me. Possession is more important. Okay, so I kick God off his throne and put something else in his place. That makes sense. Don't know about you, you know, group of Scousers, but I've never stolen a car. We won't ask for a show of hands, eh? Might be embarrassing. Okay, so let's choose something else a little bit close to home. Have you ever laughed at another person for something that they can't help? It's just the way they are. X Factor was on last night, and I can't actually watch those beginning stages of X Factor. I can't. A few years ago, I just realized what it was making me do. It was making me, you know, when people come on and they sing and they're awful and everyone laughs at them. And I was watching this and I was just struck by, this is just not right. I can't do it. These poor people who really believe they can sing and we make sport out of laughing at them. That's by the by anyway, which X Factor you want. But the Bible tells me that everyone was created by God, that he made them that way on purpose. And yet sometimes we're pretty cruel to other people, either out loud or in our heads. Because what? Because we're better than them? Because we're better than the God who made them? I kick God off his throne and put something else in his place. Maybe myself in his place. Okay, so that's a thought about sin. So in the Old Testament, that's the first bit of the Bible, God put some things in place to address sin. And you can read about this in the book of Exodus. It's because he's so desperate to maintain this relationship, but he can't and he won't lower his holiness. He won't lower his being perfect. So when you read those early books that are all about rules, about killing animals and blood and doing all sorts of things, and they're all to try and show God that we're sorry and to put him back on his throne. But the animals can't forgive us. They can't make it right. They're just a picture to help us understand and to help the people of the day understand what's going on. Ultimately, God had a better plan. It's a biggie. It's to allow part of himself to be one of us, to lower himself, to be killed by us, I haven't got this written down, but I was once talking about the Easter story to my four-year-old reception class. And it was, you know, being really dramatic the way I was reading it. And then I got to the part and I was like, and they killed Jesus. And all these kids went, and I stopped and thought, yeah, it is pretty bad, isn't it, really? This Jesus, God, coming down and killed him. Just took me back. Now, I could talk all day about who Jesus was and all the well-documented, amazing things that he did, but I haven't got time for that today. If you don't know those stories, you don't know about Jesus, come and talk to Pastor John. I know he would love to talk to you about it. Some of the other elders, Maya, Danny, they would love to talk to you about it, spend time telling you all about Jesus and how amazing he was. But I'm here to talk about the cross today. And when I was preparing this as well, I realized that we often think about the pain, don't we? I know people who come to church, you often think about the pain, gruesomeness, the thorns in his head and the nails through his hands. And yeah, it was horrendous. But actually, I think I sometimes spent so much time focusing on the gruesome bits that I missed what was going on. So let me just read this to you. This is from, I'm going to ask you, if you've got your Bible with you, turn to this one, because that gives me time to have a little breather. Okay. Matthew 27, verses 50 to 54. So it's only a small bit. So if you've got your Bible with you, Matthew 27, 50. Okay. It's talking about the moment when Jesus died. So it's given a, if you read back, the story of how Jesus got to the cross, and then this is the moment when Jesus dies. And when Jesus had cried out again in a loud voice, he gave up his spirit. At that moment, the curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. The earth shook. The rocks split and the tombs broke open. The bodies of many holy people who had died were raised to life. They came out of the tombs after Jesus' resurrection and went into the holy city and appeared to many people. When the centurion and those with him who were guarding Jesus saw the earthquake and all that had happened, they were terrified and exclaimed, "Surely he was the Son of God." Okay, so we're not going to focus on all the zombies walking about. I'm going to leave that discussion to the small group leaders. You're welcome, guys. I'm not going to go there, okay. But this curtain was torn in two from top to bottom. There's a massive earthquake, okay. The rocks split open. And the people watching, the people who were there to guard Jesus, declared, surely he was the Son of God. Surely he was the person who he said he was. And that's why we just killed him. So what I want to talk to you about today is this curtain. I sound really scouting a curtain. It's my accent coming back. Going back to the Old Testament again, have you heard of the Ark of the Covenant? Are you thinking Indiana Jones? Okay, all right. The Holy Grail and all that. The truth of it is that the Ark of the Covenant was God's presence on earth. And you can read about that in Exodus 25 if you want to go and look at that later. It was a box and it held the Ten Commandments and it was so special. It was God's representation on earth, God's presence on earth. It was so special that you couldn't touch this. If you touched it, you died. End of. And there's a story in the Bible about that and how they had to carry it and how they had to move it about. Because at first, God's people weren't settled in one place. And so God gives them very specific instructions about building this really special tent called a tabernacle to put this Ark of the Covenant in. And the Ark of the Covenant had to be behind. It had to be in the center of the tent, right in the middle, behind a thick curtain, and only one guy on one day, after doing all sorts of things, washing, sacrificing, things to put God back on his throne and say sorry for all the bad things he'd done, only he could go in. Okay, so when I was researching this as well, I was reminded that, that first of all, the people were traveling, so they had a tent that they had the curtain and the Ark of the Covenant. And then when they settled, they built a temple, again, to God's specifications. And then that was destroyed in 587 BC and rebuilt in 19 BC, I believe. But each time, either the tent or the temple, the Ark of the Covenant was always treated really specially, always in the Holy of Holies, the innermost bit, always behind this curtain, always only the one person could go in and spend time with God in there. Now this curtain, because of the tent and then the two temples, we can't exactly say exactly how thick this curtain was, but reports say it was either between 2 inches thick, which is like what, this, and 4 inches thick. I'm not very good with amounts. Okay, so it's pretty thick. Our curtains today are what, a couple of millimeters? And I couldn't rip one of them with my bare hands. And yet it was between, probably about, maybe 3 inches, let's say. Between 2 and 4 inches thick. Josephus, who was a historian, said that two horses couldn't, if they pulled opposite directions, they couldn't tear this curtain. That's how strong it was. I was telling this to my husband, who's works in industry, and he was like, "Well, you'd need to get like an angle grinder on that, wouldn't you?" You know what an angle grinder is. Okay. So this, you know, we can't go near this. And in fact, that one guy, the priest who went in, had to have a bell tied around him in case he'd done it all wrong and he just died. And the people had to then have a rope and pull him out because they couldn't go in to retrieve him. Pretty special. So at this moment when Jesus dies, there's an earthquake. Okay, we've got to ask ourselves, what happens, what is going on here for a man to breathe his last and an earthquake happens at that precise moment? And also at the same time, this curtain, which is probably between 40 and 60 feet, pretty high, tears down the middle. Really thick curtain, rips. And it rips from top to bottom. Now, this isn't so we can finally get to God. It's actually so God can get to us. It wasn't ripped from the bottom up. Jesus blows wide open that door to God. Wide open. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't find it hard to believe that I was created by God. That me, you, everyone, created by God. We were singing that amazing song, weren't we, about how creation reveals God and reveals the face of God, and it's beautiful, it's amazing. I just find it unbelievable. As well, you know, I've just had Jonah 18 months ago, and I love watching him grow and develop. It just amazes me. And I have lots of friends who've got babies, and each of them are just so different from birth. Like completely individual, unique, have personalities from the day they're born. And when I was pregnant, I loved getting email updates every week about the development of my baby and whether its fingernails had developed and how, do you know, they have a heartbeat from like 8 weeks? Really, really early, amazing. And this baby was magically developing inside me without me really doing too much about it. I believe in a God who creates. I believe in a God who creates to love, to know you. I've experienced it, I've felt it. I've seen it in hundreds of other people. I could tell you hundreds of stories of people who've met with God and had their lives amazingly changed. But what I've been trying to get my head around is this profound event whereby I can live without guilt or shame for the things that I know I've done that were wrong, knowing that no anger or wrath is reserved for me by a holy God. I'm just going to read that again. I can live without guilt or shame for the things that I know I've done wrong, knowing that no anger or wrath is reserved for me by a holy God. Now, I just want to finish today by having a word with just two groups of people. Now, some of you will be listening to this, and you'll know in your heart right now that what you've heard today is just too big to ignore. I want to tell you that what you need to do is really simple. It says in Romans 10, which again is in the part of the Bible, second part of the Bible, Romans 10, verse 9, if you declare with your mouth that Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. That's all you need to do. Simple, isn't it? Sometimes it can seem like a really hard thing. And because we are English, having the guts to tell somebody, having the guts to say those words out loud can be really tough. I'm just going to challenge you today. Pick somebody you know as a Christian, maybe one of the people who are getting baptized this morning, or somebody else who you trust, maybe Pastor John, and go to them and say, I believe I believe Jesus is Lord. I believe he died and he came back to life. If they're a Christian, you know they've done it too. So it's not that scary, really. And you know, in that one little sentence, you know what you're doing? You're putting God back on his throne. Now, the other group of people, and I admit this is me, really, it's where I've been the last few weeks since the journey that I'm on. You're Christians, you love God, you believe in Jesus, you maybe even tell people about him, but you've maybe taken the cross for granted. Maybe you've just been so busy with life that you've popped other things on that throne. Maybe you never really understood it in the first place. You need to come back and be honest before God, say that you're sorry, and thank him for this amazing gift of the cross. Remember who you are and what you are made for. That's all I've got to say to you today. It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much for having me. Is that okay, Pastor John? Good. Thank you.